So let's learn about a couple of short topics in the parasha. Short in Yonah parasha. Let's first start with the Eilas Shemois B'nei Yisrael. This is a very popular parasha for Rabbonim to be mechazek their community in the laws and halacha of Shnayim Mikra the Echad Targum. There is a requirement. This is a Gemara Amar Rav Huna Li'olam. The word Li'olam means always Yashalem. What's the correct pronunciation? Yashlem. I think there's a mistake in my text here. Yashlem Adam Parshiyosav Imatzibor Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum V'Afilu Atres V'Divayin Shekol HaMishalim Shekol HaMashlim Parshiyosav Im Hatzibor Ma'arichin Lo Yomav Ushnoisav. Okay, that's a pretty nice. Now, why is Parsha Shemois the Parsha where all of the Rabbanim the Mechazek Olam and Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum? Because the word Shemos is Shenayim is Rosh Tevois. Shenayim is the Shin, Mem is Mikra, Vav is V'Echad, and the Tav is Targum. Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum V'Ela Shemois B'nei Yisrael. And person, so this is this halacha, and it's the morning daf ches misach. The brach is a very, very, very important halacha, and there's obviously a lot to be said about it, and it's something which is very, very difficult to do. I think many, many people have a very hard time having the discipline every single week to learn Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum. And are there any heterim not to learn Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum? No, there are no heterim. And it's a halacha. It has to be done. And there's really no way around it. I remember once hearing someone ask a shayla to a rav, to a very big paisek, and he said to him, I am so busy. I've literally not a second in the day, and I just don't have time. Is there any heter for me to be exempt? So the rav said to him, the only heter I can give you is that when you listen to Kriya Satoira on Shabbos, that can count as one time Mikra. But as far as the second time of Mikra and the Targum, I'm sorry to disappoint you. I have no heter for you. There's no heter for you not to recite, to read the Torah, the Parsha, and to recite the Targum. And someone is saying that's also why it says Chazal begin with the word le'olam. Ordinarily, the words of Chazal in this type of a halacha would be written with the word chayov. Chayov adam lehashlim parshiyosav shnayim mikra v'yechad targum. Why did Chazal select the word le'olam forever? If we study the pattern of language that Chazal used to obligate us in mitzvahs, the word le'olam is not common. It's very rare. And many of the darshanim, they use this as an indication that the obligation is absolute. There is absolutely no room to wiggle. Let me read you right over here from one of my favorite svarim, the Nesive HaParsha, Rabbi Dvorkis. He only has like 15 volumes on halacha that we extract from the Parsha. And in one of his volumes he writes over here, he quotes the Sefer Marpe B'Nefesh. I'll just read the words. Lahazber hidine b'shulchan aruch simen resh pehei muve haloshen. Now he quotes something very interesting. In Shulchan Aruch, where this halacha is cited, it does not say the word le'olam. The Mechaber, the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Cairo, deviated from the words of the Gemara. The Gemara said the words le'olam, and the Mechaber changed the word le'olam to the word chayov. Shulchan Aruch, Simen, Reish Behei, it says chayov adam lehashlim. So the question that the Marpe Loshen asks, why did he deviate? So he goes on to say something like this. He writes, "The im ein biyad chumash chayv lachzer achrav udloy kamoshem etzinu begabin gabiner besamim lahavdalo dechazvataz
The ain chayv gamur, the ain chayv gamur, vim ain loy, ain oy chayv lachso alaf. Aval, b'shem yachotagam, ain akei mishim nehu chayv gamur, nokta gamur b'loshen le oylam, lo hoyrois, the yeish kan chayv gamur, l'mash akosa b'shulchum arach b'loshen chayv, loy rotsa l'shanes mishmas loshen gamur, rak lahazbir l'chadeid l'varkonis. Okay, he's not really explaining, but he does. He's not really explaining. He's saying he's just combining together the fact that the Gemara says le'olam and in Shulchan Aruch it says chayav, and he wants to suggest that when it comes to many mitzvahs, there's a point where if you can't do the mitzvah, you are exempt. I was recently learning the laws of kiddush Shabbos morning, or even kiddush Friday night. Let's talk about Kiddush Shabbos morning. What happens if you don't have wine? What do you do? Well, you can use Chamar Medina. What's Chamar Medina? Beer, whiskey, liquor. What happens if you don't have it? So then you can use coffee, tea. Let's say you don't even have that. Can you use orange juice? Not so simple. But if push comes to shove, it's all you have available is orange juice, so you can use orange juice. What about using Coca-Cola? Not so simple. But the bottom line is, if you don't have nothing but Coca-Cola, so use Coca-Cola. You can use soda as well for kiddush. You can make kiddush on soda if you really have nothing else. Let's say you have nothing. There's no beverage to be found except for water. Water is not valid. L'chol adeis. You cannot use water. So then the halach is you make Kiddush Shabbos Day on bread. How do you make Kiddush on bread? You just, before you say the Hamoitzi Lechem in Aretz, you say the Psukim, you say a few Psukim. Ordinarily, you don't need to say Psukim, you just make the Bracha. But if you're going to make it on bread in order to show that you're making Kiddush on bread by Shabbos Day, because there's absolutely no liquid to be found in the house, you make Hamoitzi Lechem, you say Shamu V'nei Yisrael, and you say a couple of psukim in order to show that you're making kiddush on the bread. What happens if there's no bread? What do you do? So this, it seems to say that the halacha seems to indicate that there's no such thing as making kiddush on mezonos that you can't do. So what do? Guess what? You don't make kiddush. Maybe you could argue that if you can't make kiddush, you can't eat. So Shabbos morning, if there's no wine, there's no beer, there's no liquor, there's no whiskey, there's no coffee, tea, there's no orange juice, there's no soda, all there is water, and there's no bread. All you're going to eat, all you have to eat Shabbos morning is some cake, or some fruit, or challant. All you have for Shabbos morning is challant. Potato kugel, and challant, b'cha, and fish. Filter fish and herring, plenty of food. Yeah, you have quite a bit to eat. But there is no bread to be found, and there is no beverage to be found other than water. So maybe you can argue, you're stuck. Too bad for you. All that expensive food you have stored on waiting to be eaten cannot be eaten until you hear Kiddush. And if you can't hear Kiddush, so fast. So wait until 5 o'clock till Shabbos is over. You make Havdalah. How are you going to make Havdalah? You don't have one either. Whatever. That's a separate question. You can't. So the Mishnah Berurah writes very clearly, and I don't think there's any makar for this. I don't think he has any source for this. He just says this on his own. It's a fact. It's a God-given fact that Chazal did not create the mitzvah of Kiddush Shabbos Day to make you fast. There's no way Chazal instant. There's a mitzvah de'oraisa of oinek. It's a very this halacha, you should know. It touches upon many yesoidos of yadus. What the Mishnah Berurah says, there's a mitzvah de'oraisa of oinek Shabbos. The karaso l'Shabbos oinek. It's a pasuk in the Nevi'im. Shabbos is meant to be a day of pleasure. Chazal came along and gave us a mitzvah of making kiddush. Sanctify your Shabbos day meal by first making kiddush. The ideal way to make kiddush is to take a cup of wine, fill it up with the revius of yayin to the top, and you make a bari priyagofen, by making a bari priyagofen before you eat your bread, before you eat your meal, this is a sign you are showing that you are sanctifying the day with holiness. Bari priyagofen. You don't have wine, so you can sanctify it with whiskey, with beer, v'chulu v'chulu. Let's say you have none of the above. Okay, you can sanctify it with the recital of Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz. Because bread is choshev. Bread is something that is very significant. People do not always eat bread during the week, on a weekday. You eat bread when you have a more formal meal. So the way you're going to sanctify the Shabbos, if you have absolutely no beverage whatsoever, the Mishnah Berurah says you make Kiddush on bread. How do you show you making the Kiddush on bread? Because anyway, you're going to eat the bread. So it's not that Mishnah Berurah, he doesn't say this actually, but it says in other Svarim, you should wash. And right before you make the Hamotzi, you should recite a few Pesukim that you ordinarily recite for Kiddush. And then the Mishnah Berurah says, let's say you don't have even bread. All you have is cake and cholent and kugel and soup and fish and herring and pcha and who knows what else you got there, kishka, what else, whatever you got. All of these items do not qualify in any sense of the word of Kiddush. They do not fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush. So what are you going to do? What do you do then? So maybe you can't eat. You have to fast. If the mitzvah d'oraisa is to have enjoyment, oineg, the Mishnah Berurah writes, it's not possible that the chazal would come along and take that away from you. To take away enjoyment in this world, that's your God-given right. You have a bill of rights. Every Jew has a bill of rights. The Torah. And the Torah says, V'korosa l'shabbos oneg. Enjoyment. Eat a hot cholent. You like pastrami? You like salami? You like gefilte fish? It's your God-given right. V'korosa l'shabbos oneg. Chazal said, wait a minute, don't be a glutton, sanctify it. Sanctify your enjoyment. How? Recite Kiddush. I don't have anything to make Kiddush on. No beverage to be found. All I have is water. And as far as foods, we're not going to have bread. It cannot be Chazal gave you a mitzvah that should result in you suffering, losing the opportunity to have oneg. So therefore, you know what? Don't make Kiddush. Just eat without Kiddush. If you have wine, it is forbidden for you to eat until you recite Bari Priyagofen. But if you don't have wine and you don't have bread, no substitute, so eat. Eat without Kiddush. There comes a point in time where, forget it. Just cut your losses, enjoy what Hashem gave you. This halacha that I just told you is an awesome Musar Haskel in the Derech Hashem, in serving Hashem. Because if you look at mitzvahs of Chazal as burdens, restrictions, and techniques to make your life difficult and suffer, then you've missed the boat. Then you don't know what you're doing. You're not doing the mitzvah the right way. Just like Chazal said, the Mishnah Berurah says that if you can't make Kiddush, don't make Kiddush, because it cannot be that Hashem is going to take away from you oneg. Hashem put you in this world not to torture you, not to make you suffer. So if you find yourself up in situations where there are mitzvahs to Rabbanon and every mitzvah is another burden upon you, another restriction, then you're doing something wrong. Because that's not what Chazal had in mind. You have to reassess, recalibrate what is going on. Many people you speak to, they just feel overwhelmed. They feel overwhelmed, like especially people that are not yet religious. I was once in a pharmacy, and there was a Russian immigrant. And you can see the Russian immigrant had a very difficult life. very difficult. You can just get a sense. And it's an elderly person. They were in the pharmacy, and it appeared that they were religious to a degree, semi-religious, or sensitive at least to Yadus, and they wanted to buy vitamins, a certain vitamin. And the person behind the counter told them, well, we have two options. One is kosher, has kosher certification, and the other one does not. And this woman, she asked, how much does the one that has kosher certification cost? And he told her like $2 more, whatever it was. So I was online next to her. This was way before social distancing laws existed. And she turns to me and she says, you see, the rabbis, they just want to make it difficult for us. It bothered her so much that the pharmacist was asking her to pay she asked, what are my options? I have two brands, I have this and this. This is kosher certification and this does not. If you want to take it, $2 more. She turned and she was bitter. You see, the rabbis, they just want to make it difficult for us to pay $2 more for the same exact product. So if everything in life is that attitude, there's something really wrong. So for this woman, first of all, probably it's all likely that the brand that did not have kosher certification was just as kosher, okay? It's just as kosher. It's just, in the Hanam, she was right. Someone's trying to rip her off. But that's besides the point. It illustrates an attitude that people who are introduced to Yadus and they heap upon them restriction after restriction after restriction to deny them their own egg in this world, there's something wrong. Look at the Mishnah Berurah. If you can't make Kiddush, he doesn't just say you can eat. He explains why you can eat. His words are, I have to go find it, I was learning it yesterday. His words are, if there's a mitzvah of Oinek Shabbos, it's not logical that the Rabbanon would do something to take away your Oinek Shabbos. It's just amazing how he says it. He didn't have to say it. You know, the Mishnah Berurah is very, very bekitzer. He writes, it's awesome and it's mutter. Finish. It's very dry. Mishnah Berurah is not an exciting sefer. A lot of people, they get burnt out learning Mishnah Berurah because it doesn't have a lot of flavor. You see, the Chayei Adam is musar. There's a lot of flavor in the Chayei Adam. Mishnah Berurah is very cut and dry. But here, he doesn't just say, you would expect, if you don't have A, B, C, D, E, F, G, okay, mutter, you can eat without Kiddush. He goes on. On Shabbos, there's oinek. It can't be the Rabbanon would put you in a position to deny you the oinek because you can't do what they want you to do. So therefore, don't do it. Eat without Kiddush. This is a Musar Haskel for all of the mitzvahs in the Torah. Look, you have to follow the halacha. I'm not trying to promote apikursis here, chas v'shalom. But certainly, in the attitude of the mitzvah, it's not a religion to torture you. And if you find yourself being tortured, then something is wrong. The whole approach to your relationship with Hashem and with the mitzvah is a serious problem. You're not doing it right. Now, why did I tell you all of that? I told you all of that as a hakdama to Shnayim Mikra V'yecho Targum. If you can't make Kiddush, so you don't make Kiddush. Gesund hate, eat. You don't make Kiddush. If you can't buy a Ner Shabbos, I don't have the money. I can't afford to buy Ner Shabbos. So you know what? Don't light Shabbos candles. Have a nice day. Don't light Shabbos candles. There are many mitzvahs where it comes a point in time, if you can't do it, so don't. You're exempt. You're poor. If you don't have the money, so you're not obligated. He writes here, Shnayim Mikra V'yecho Targum is not one of them. Person will come to the rabbi, I don't have the time. Some people don't have money, I don't have time. Time is more valuable than money. I don't have time. Every single moment of my day, my wife has, has told me what to do with it. I go to Davin, I then carpool, and then carpool this one and carpool that one. I have to go shopping. I have to go to work to make money. I have to go to the bank. I have to go to the dentist. I have to go do this. I have to go do that. You live the whole life. It's, I don't have a second free. And you're telling me I should sit down for 3 hours a week, carve out in my schedule 3 hours of undisturbed peace and serenity to read Shnayim Mikra V'Yecha Targum, break my teeth on Targum, and I have no idea what in the world it says. I can't even barely pronounce the words, get out of my mouth. What, are you kidding? I'm no different, even though I may be a multimillionaire, but my life is scripted. My time is consumed by every narishka you can imagine. I don't have time to do this the same way a poor person who's a beggar in the street doesn't have a penny to go buy a piece of bread. So what do you want from me? The answer is, this is not like other mitzvahs. This mitzvah in the Talmud, it says le'olam. And the word le'olam translates into meaning there are no exceptions. If you don't have, beg. Beg from people who you owe time to. Can you do me a favor? Can you give me an extra 15 minutes? Can I come 15 minutes late? Because I have an obligation. The same way a poor person goes to shul begging, can you give me a dollar? Can you give me 50 cents? Go on the train. It's so sad. So sad. I haven't eaten the whole day. I don't know if they're telling me the truth or not. I have no idea if it's true or not. But it's so humiliating. I don't know how these people, they stoop to such a low where they have no shame in going around and asking people, do they beg like that? Well, guess what? When it comes to Shnayim Mikra V'Yecha Targum, you have an obligation to go beg. To go beg all the people who you owe all of your time to, can you please give me 10 minutes? Let me give me 10 minutes in order I can do Shnayim Mikra V'Yecha Targum. That's what it says. That's how he learns over in the Ma'ariv Lashon. It's a shocking thing. It's a really shocking chiddush to say how the Chomer Hadavar of doing Shnayim Mikra V'Yecha Targum is. Because the truth is, Hafoichba, Chazal were very clever. They knew what they were saying. Because the truth is, Hafoichba, Hafoichba, the Kulaba. Everything at the end of the day is rooted in Chumash, in the words of the Chumash. And not the esoteric, Kabbalistic Rambans and the Ibn Ezra's and the Sifsei Chachamim and the deep intricacies of Rashi. Just the basic Chumash with a bare skeleton translation of the Targum. Everything is there. Everything you need for your entire life is there. And if you're not going to become fluent with the contents of the basic skeleton of the Torah, you don't stand a chance to survive in the wild west of this world. And that's why Chazal said, Le'olam, there's no excuse in the world. No one would walk in the street naked. At least normal people. You wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it. You couldn't survive. You can't survive this world without basic knowledge of what it says in the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. All right, now let's go to another topic, to just touch on different topics today. I want to talk now, let's say very briefly, on the topic of Rosha Loma Sake Esrayach. Moshe Rabbeinu, he witnesses Dasan va'Aviram fighting with one another, and he says to Dasan, Dasan, Lama sake esrei, vayomer lo rosha. He says to the wicked one, did Moshe Rabbeinu actually call him Rosha? Doesn't seem so, but the Torah calls him a Rosha. Did Moshe Rabbeinu, did he compose these words? Seemingly not. The words are Peruch HaKodesh. So it seems that Hashem is the one who calls this person a Rasha. Lama Sake Esrayach. The question is, did Dasan actually hit, did his hands make physical contact with Aviram, or did he just raise up his hands? This is a machlekes in the Gemara. I'll read the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin and Daf Nun Ches. Omar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says, Hamagbia Yodai Al Chaderoi. A person raises his hand to his friend. Afalpi, Shaloi Hikohu. There's no room for the imagination here. It makes it clear as day. He did not hit him. Shaloi Hikohu. Just to raise up a hand. Nikra Rasha. That is not a light term. Shenemar, Vayomer Lo Rasha. Moshe said to the Rasha, to Dasan, Lama Sakeh Re'echa. Why are you hitting your friend? It does not say, Lama Hikisa in the past tense. What is the proof? It does not say, Lama Hikisa in the past tense. Lo Nemar Ella Sakeh in the future. Why are you planning to hit your friend? Okay, and then there's also a medrash that says, Lama Hikisa Loi Nemar, same exact thing, Ella Sakeh. Mikan, Shema said this, what it says in the medrash, Shema Shrabah, Shemeirim Yodei Al Chaver, Lahakarese Alfi Shlahika, Oiso Nikra Rasha. Now here's the problem. The problem is, we have a principle in Halacha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not mitzdaref machshava ra lemaisa. General principle, the Gemara says that a person who has an evil thought, this is a piece of Gemara, I have it over here somewhere. Person who only plans, here it is, Masechta Kiddushin, on Daf Mem. The Gemara says, Machshava ro'o, ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitzdaref lemaisa etzel Yisrael. By non-Jews, Hashem, by a non-Jew, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mitzdaref machshava ro'o lemaisa, but by a Jew, Hashem never holds us accountable for an evil thought if the evil thought does not result in an action. And the Gemara learns this out from a pasuk. Okay, learns it from a pasuk, and this is what it says in Masechta Kiddushin. Gemara learns. So the question over here is: this appears to be an exception. Person raises up his hand to hit his fellow man, and he's prevented from doing so by Moshe Rabbeinu Lama Sakeh in the future tense. He is already called a Rasha. Zelofer, he didn't do it. Hashem is not mitzdarf machshava ro lemaisa. Why is this an exception to the rule? So let's give two very basic answers. Two answers which each answer in and of itself is deserving of a Nobel Prize. The first answer we just explained, I don't have the Gemara, I should have done my homework better, but this is a Gemara Masechta Kiddushin, where the Gemara learns that by a Jew, Hashem is not mitzdarf machshava ro lemaisa, but by a Goy, Hashem is mitzdaref machshava ro lemaisa. If a non-Jew has a plans to rob a bank, and then he comes to the bank, and for whatever reason the bank is closed, he can't get in. He was going to hold up the bank and clean him out, and he comes to the bank. And guess what? Oops! What happened over here? I'm sorry. He comes to the bank, and the bank is closed, so he couldn't do it. In Shemayim, the non-Jew will be punished just the same. The Gemara has a drasha. The Gemara compares it to Avodah Zarah. By Avodah Zarah, it all depends on Machshava. The Gemara has a drasha. He's chayif. When a Jew lifts up his hand to hit another Jew, he becomes a goy. In Yadus, generally, you can't convert out. If you take a Jew and you baptize him, right? All they did during these missionaries. All of these different stories of God and Christians taking little children, they baptize them. It's meaningless. Baptize, do it all you want. You go take a shower, take them to a swimming pool. Who cares? It's a joke. There's no such thing. There is no such thing in Judaism as a Jew converting out. Doesn't exist. There's a Jew, he doesn't have heirs. He needs to do teshuva. But there's no such thing as converting out. Doesn't exist. Other religions, which are man-made religions, and their rules, there's such a principle, you can do something, you can convert out. You can leave the fold. You're no longer a Christian. I don't know how it works. A Muslim, they do something that no longer, according to the playbook, the laws, the rules and regulations of their religion, are they called a member of that religion. In Yadus, divine, you're born a Jew, you're a Jew whether you like it or not. There's no such thing. There's one exception, or at least a momentary exception. You lift up your hand. When you lift up your hand to another person, you show you're a guy, because that's what a guy does. A guy lives with power. Klal Yisrael, a koil, koil, Yaakov. The Hayodayim Yidei Esav. Esav, a guy, Esav here is used as a model of a guy, a non-Jew, us against them, the whole world, all 70 nations. It's all included in the template, the boilerplate of Esav. Esav lives with power. Hayodayim Yidei Esav. Whoever has more nukes wins. What's the Cold War? The Cold War is who has more nukes, who can nuke the other one more times? United States, Soviet Union, whoever has shinier toys, better batteries in their Duracell, whatever it is. Whoever has better toys wins. Power, the ability to physically clobber the other is what gives you power in the secular world. That is a reality. Make no mistake about it. That's why Trump's whole principle, one of his items on his agenda is to rebuild the military. The United States should have the strongest military in the world. Other nations, other presidents, they don't care for that. They couldn't care less about the military. They give everything away. A guy, in order to establish yourself as a power, means physical power. The Torah makes it clear as day that by Klal Yisrael, that's not the way it works. A koil, koil Yaakov. There's a call of Torah and a call of Tefillah. Vezehu. Everything else is just nonsense. It may not be nonsense in the dangerous world that we live in. There's no question that there's an obligation to engage in the ultimate hishtadlus. But as far as our mindset and our priority, what makes Klal Yisrael, what grants power to Klal Yisrael, is the koil koil Yaakov. When a Jew lifts up his hand to another fellow Jew, he has made a statement, I am converting out of this religion. I am not going to be part of a religion where the focus is the koil Yaakov. I want to be like a goy, where what's important is power. The Yodayim Yidei Esav. Oh, you want to convert out? Okay. B'derech she'odom roitze leilech, shamalichin oisai. Good, you're out. You're out. Oh, a goy, we have a principle. Gemara Masechta the Kedushin, now the Gemara is a drasha. A goy, HaKadosh Baruch Hu holds accountable for a machshava. Machshava kemaisa. You don't have to actually do the Avera. If you plan to do the Avera, these are the rules. You want to understand how that works? That's a different shir. That's a different sugya. Look, Gemara Masechta Kedushin, Daf Mem, the Gemara says, there's a fundamental difference between Jews and non-Jews. Hashem loves Klal Yisrael, so Hashem gives us extra slack. If you only wanted to do the Avera and you did not succeed, you got lucky. you got really lucky. Hashem is not going to punish you. But a non-Jew that really wanted to do the Avera, and for some reason beyond his control, he was unsuccessful. Oh, you wanted to do the Avera? No, I'll give you credit for doing the Avera. You will be punished. You will suffer the consequences as if you did the Avera. Those are the rules. When a Jew lifts up his hand to another Jew, he has converted out for that moment. Hakol kol Yaakov. Ve'hayodayim yidei Esav. Oh, you're Esav now? You don't have to hit him. Just having a desire to hit another Jew, even if you fail, because Moshe Rabbeinu comes in and stops you the very last moment, it doesn't matter. You're called a Rasha. Okay? So this is Yesod number one. The only way we know in Judaism that one can convert out, at least temporarily, is by lifting up your hand to another fellow Jew. That is converting out. Now, answer number two is a totally different answer. This is something which is spoken about, and that is, you did something. What do you mean? What do you mean you did not do anything by lifting up your hand? What do you mean? You're a terrorist. This is a critical concept in discussing terrorism. We live in a generation of terrorism. Terrorism took a shtickle break, Baruch Hashem. Corona was the ultimate terrorist. Really, think about it. We're living in a generation before Corona came along. What was the buzzword in this generation? Terrorism. I don't even know when I was a kid. I never heard of that word. I never heard the word terrorism. Okay, it was a danger. Everyone knows we live in a dangerous world. Everyone knows there are predators, and there are crazy people, and there are people that hijack airplanes, and there are a bunch of lunatics out there. Everyone knows there's a crazy world. There are the Nazis, the Holocaust. But you know something? I don't think in all the years when I was a child, we learned about the Holocaust, and when I was a kid, the Holocaust was a big deal. Today, I don't see being a big deal, unfortunately, with the kids today. I don't see them. They don't even know what it is, unfortunately. But when I was in Lower Sar MTJ, it was a big deal. It was really a very big deal, Holocaust. They used to have every year a Holocaust event in MTJ. They spoke about it. But I don't remember when they spoke about the Holocaust, they ever used the word terrorist or the word terrorism. I don't remember. Maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe I just didn't just pass me by. Later, when I got much older, then it was like a new concept. A terrorist. Okay, 9/11 was the Maccabee Patish. 9/11 was the real back. But even before 9/11, it was a new thing called a terrorist. And what is a terrorist? Okay, you can write a whole encyclopedia. What exactly is a terrorist? The terrorists, one thing is for sure, they won. That we know. The terrorists won. In many, many ways, they won. Okay, hands down, they've changed our lives in so many ways. They've won, unfortunately. And now you want to go talk about Corona. You know, Corona is the ultimate terrorist in how it changed our lives. When you lift up your hand to another person, and that other fellow is looking up, and he sees the aggressor, the criminal in front of him, with his hand ready to come down, smash on his head. What emotion does the victim feel before the impact? Before the impact. Terror. Isn't that what he feels? What is terror? The unknown. I'm about to be blown to smithereens. And those moments before it happens, as you see it happening, or you see the threat, that's terror. That's real. Now, this is something very unique in halacha. Because generally, halacha shies away from the intangible. Classic example. Today, if someone insults you, they just insult you. They insult you. You go to court, and you can sue them for $1 billion. Libel, right? So they write in the newspaper something not nice about you. You have to have a very good lawyer to know how to do this. You can basically psychological damage. they've hurt my feelings. They've ruffled my feathers. Now, I don't know all the intricate details of what exactly you need to do. Do you need to prove that you can't get a job now? Because they said something not nice about me, so no one wants to give me a job. I need therapy. Look, I'm in therapy. I spent $10,000 a year on therapy because he insulted me. So you see, I'm damaged. I'm entitled to sue him for $10 million. In America, this works. It goes. You just have to have a good lawyer, and you have to manipulate the system, and you can win a lot of money for intangible harm. Something that you cannot put your finger on, and you can claim that I don't feel good about something bothers me. If you know how to maneuver, you can extract millions of crazy, crazy untold sums of money. That is how society is set up, whether we like it or not. The Torah is laughing its head off at this. In the Torah, there's almost no such thing as this type of payment. There's boshes. There is something called boshes. Nezek tsar, there's tsar. But the definition of tsar means if a person's going to have his arm amputated, so there are two ways to do it. They can cut off the arm with a sword, or they can give him anesthesia and take it off delicately. How much would you pay for the difference? That's called tsar. When you're anyway going to suffer, how much will you pay to do it your way, to bring the pain to do it? In America, you didn't suffer. It's perceived make-believe suffering that's imaginary in your mind. For that, you can extract a million times more than the Torah will ever give you for the difference between, if any way they have to amputate your arm, how much will be the difference between doing it this way or doing it that way? The Torah does not award money for intangible, imaginary pain. It doesn't. That is left bin Adam Lamokon. There is no doubt about it that the Torah does not make light of it, does not ignore it, is insensitive, but that is left to bin Adam Lamokon. The Torah does not address every crime in this world. It's a very important principle. There are crimes that you can get away with in the Torah. The Torah does not address every single crime. The Torah has a very elaborate system of punishment and mishpat and tzedek and emes to protect, to guard society and victims. But the Torah leaves out certain crimes which cannot be resolved in court of law in this world. And what does that mean? Those things you have to leave to Shamayim. There's the Bezdin Shalmaila and there's the Bezdin Shalmata. In the Bezdin Shalmata, the Torah set aside numerous laws and situations that granted them enormous power to resolve, to judge, and to find solutions. But the Torah acknowledged that we're living in a very limited world. This is not a perfect world. And Bezdin can't solve your every little problem. If someone calls you a name, the Torah doesn't give you a solution for that. Torah says that's between you and him. If he's not going to ask you mechila, he's in trouble. He's in trouble. But guess what? There's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing you can do. It's not a perfect world. You can't take him to court and sue him for $1 million. Doesn't go like that. You lose. You're a victim. Accept it. Accept the fact that you're a victim. And get on with your life. Shake it off and go further. There's no solution. We live in an imperfect. The Torah does not give Bezdin the power to resolve every problem in this world. We live in a society where we think that we can. If you insult someone, so we live in a society where we think, oh, so there's got to be a law somewhere buried there in the Constitution, my Bill of Rights, that allows me to sue him because he insulted me, you know, when I was in kindergarten. My kindergarten teacher didn't wasn't nice to me, so now my whole life has been destroyed, so I have a right to sue them and to sue the school and to destroy the world. That's pretty much, because we have this unrealistic expectation of what the government and what the court should be able to do for us. Now, when we take that principle to and expand upon it, it would be very natural to say that if a person raises up his hands to you, and and you look up and you see it coming, you would say, listen, the guy's a tzaddik. He's a tzaddik because the Torah, and let's say he doesn't hit you. He's looking up and he's about to give you a zetz. And then all of a sudden something happens. His smartphone starts ringing and it's more important for him to take the call than to hit you. And he doesn't hit you. So if you take what we have just said and expand upon it, it's very logical to say, the guy's a tzaddik. The Torah does not deal with this. There was no, I did not have to go to the hospital. I have no doctor bills. I did not lose a day of work. I did not break any bones. I'm just as healthy now as I was before. You're going to tell me my mental health? Torah doesn't deal with this. If my mental health has not been damaged to the degree where I'm not functional, I'm just as functional now, even though someone lifted up their hand to me as I was yesterday, then the Torah doesn't deal with this. You're right. The guy is a Rasha. He's a wicked person, 100%. But it's not a perfect world. Don't have unrealistic expectations from the Torah to deal with this. Along comes this week's parsha, this halacha in Shulchan Aruch, and says, well, I'll tell you Shulchan Aruch, but basically, no, this is different. This is an exception to the rule that the Torah is just going to overlook certain injustices in this world, acknowledging it's just not its place to solve every problem. You terrorism, to terrorize another person, that emotional fear is real, it's tangible, and deserves consequences. And what do I mean by this? The Torah calls him a Rasha. So what? Yeah, so very good, is a Rasha. No. The Torah calls him a Rasha, and then as a consequence. What's the consequence? Shulchan Aruch. In Shulchan Aruch it says that a person, the Ramah writes, he quotes in Evan Ezer, Shulchan Aruch, it's a Machaber. D'yesh cheirem kadmoinim. Okay, today, I don't know, you don't hear about this today. There was a curse from the Rabbanon, the kadmoinim. Anyone that hits his friend. Now he has a whole long discussion over here in this chapter. This chem includes just raising him, but let's assume it means even raising the simple understanding is even to raise your hand. You raise your hand to another person, you cannot be counted in a minion. There's consequences. You lift up your hand to another person, if you are a terrorist, even though you have not shot one missile, you're not allowed to be part of the minyan. He walks into a room, mincha, mincha, mincha. Not him. He's a terrorist. If he's a terrorist, what's he walking around on the street? He got away with it. He didn't actually push the button. He has missiles all lined up. He wants to shoot things at people's head. So he got away with it because the laws are crazy. So yeah, we have some politicians that don't know what they're doing, so he got away with it. So he was able to get away. But did he terrorize me? Do I feel pachad in my heart? I sure do. So the Torah went out of its way to say, you're a Rasha. You're a Rasha, which Chazal picked up on this emphasis to go so far to institute a halacha that this person is in cherem and is not allowed to join a minyan. I didn't do anything, though. I didn't do anything. What do you want from me? I didn't do anything. I didn't take from him one penny. I didn't, there's no psychological damage. He's a healthy person. He's a healthy person. You see he functions. You see that he does everything he's supposed to be doing in society. He hasn't lost a day of work. Everything seems fine. Doesn't matter. You caused his heart to skip a beat. Terror is real. It's real. It's not just calling someone by a name. If you write something in the newspaper, this guy, you write Lashon Hara in the newspaper. According to the Torah, you can do nothing. According in American law, libel laws, depends. If you're a newspaper, yes. If you're a website, no. That's what's going on. That's the churban of technology. All of social media, paying attention to the news, all of social media is protected by this nonsense that they can do basically whatever they want. They're not responsible. Anything that's posted on their platform, they have absolutely no responsibility. They're free from any freedom of speech. It's an abuse, a total abuse of freedom of speech, and that's what Trump is trying so hard to repeal, to undo this abuse of social media with absolutely no accountability whatsoever. It's an abuse of freedom of speech. Well, in the Torah, guess what? You can get away with it also. The Torah allows it. It's pretty shocking, but according to Ben HaTorah, it doesn't appear to be any penalty. There's very little you can do when it comes to calling someone by names or libel. There's very little. So again, by extension, you would imagine the same. You would imagine the same should apply to terror. No. There's a difference between insulting a person and terrorizing a person. Insulting a person, according to Torah law, there's very little you can do about insulting a person. Almost nothing. How do you deal with it? If it gets to a point where it's so bad, then in a chanami, people, the rabbanim should step in. They can make rabbinic enactments. Rabbinic enactments in order to protect society from libel and things like that. But our Torah law, there's nothing. But to terrorize a person, the Torah stepped in and gave the person a label. They labelized him. The Torah did not give a person who is abusive in insulting a person a label. He's a person. We call him a nasty person. We have a lot of different names for such people who are nasty people, a lot of different titles. But the Torah never gave these people a title. Torah says, Lo selech rachel be'amecha. Don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Did we give him a term, a title? Nope. You want shishi? Give him shishi. He's not labeled. Should the rabbanon, should society step in and do? Of course, you gotta do something. But the Torah is not getting involved in this. But a person who's a terrorist, he has a label. And the label is Russia. And that label has consequences in Torah law. And when you're dealing with this, who walks in the room, a Russia walking in the room, a Russia is not part of V'nikdashti B'soich B'nei Yisrael. A minion is a deraisa. A minion is a din deraisa. 10 people, V'nikdashti B'soich B'nei Yisrael. A terrorist, min ha-Torah, cannot be mitzdarev to a minion. He's not part of V'nikdashti B'soich B'nei Yisrael. That's what we take away from this parasha. Rosha, lama sake esrayacha. Loi nema lama hikisa esrayacha. Loi sake. What does it mean, loi sake? You're a terrorist. And therefore, we're giving you a label, which is against the entire theme and impression that Chazal, that you, the flavor you get from Chazal. Okay. Another quick few things. I just want to point out, this is always just very, very fascinating. You see this in the world today. Dosan va'avim, they obviously hate each other like poison. If Dosan va'avim want to hit each other, Chazal some want to say that he was about to kill him. Lamasake Eshrayacha, Moshe Rabbeinu, he basically saved Aviram's life. Dosan was about to hit Aviram, which means he was going to kill him. Yisho Shnei Anoshim Ivrim Nitzim, two Jewish men fighting, and one of them picked up their hand to hit the other. He was going to give him such a zetz, Aviram would have died. So along comes Moshe, and Moshe saves his life. Think about it, whose life did he really save, Moshe Rabbeinu? He saved Aviram's life, but you know whose life he really saved? Dosan's life. Because once Dosan would have killed Aviram, then Dosan would have been a murderer. And it's not mistaver that in Egypt they would tolerate murderers. So they would have killed Dosan also. So who did Moshe Rabbeinu really save? He saved Aviram. He would have been killed on the spot. And Aviram would have been dead. You know, dead is dead. You're gone. Dosan would be alive. And what would Dosan? They'll lock him up in prison for the rest of his life. So what kind of life would that be? What a miserable life. Yet, Dosan's walking around on the street as a free man. Who's the one that allowed Dosan to walk around on the street as a free man? Moshe. So don't you think these two guys should send Moshe Rabbeinu a beautiful Mishloach Monos every Purim? An expensive $500 Mishloach Monos, the most expensive schnapps and delicacies to thank Moshe Rabbeinu for saving his life? No, don't you think so? Moshe Rabbeinu did them a great toiva. They both owe Moshe Rabbeinu. They owe Moshe Rabbeinu their lives. But by the way, they hate each other. I'm sure they still hate each other. Dosan va'Aviram. Look at the irony. These two bitter enemies who want to kill each other, and know every moment of their life to Moshe Rabbeinu. Together, they join forces to give Moshe Rabbeinu, for the rest of his life, pure, unadulterated Agmas Nefesh. Wherever you go, there they are making trouble. The man, who's the one that comes out in the middle of the night to go and put out the man to undermine Moshe Rabbeinu? Dosan va'Aviram. Who ran the campaign for Korach? Korach didn't know how to run a smear campaign. Korach was just a politician. He had to go hire Karl Rove. He had to go hire all these people, these experts who know how to run a campaign. Who's the one that helped Korach? Dosan va'Aviram. They were their chief strategists. I don't understand. You two guys, you hate each other. All of a sudden, you're best friends. You two, you owe everything that you have in your life to Moshe Rabbeinu. And you're coming to join forces to undermine him, to destroy him? Yeah, that's life, Rabbi Isai. That's life. That your enemies, that they make all these psukim, Amar Chazal, your enemies, they're all willing to make peace. When it comes
to the enemy of my enemy
is my friend. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. They join forces. And like, you know, the famous the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer's entire life was Kula Chassid. And he had a lot of enemies. Chassam Sofer had plenty of people that wanted to undermine him and make trouble for him. There was one particular balabas that gave him so much Agmas Nefesh. Everything that he can do to make trouble, he made trouble. So the Chassam Sofer, he once said to one of his chaverim, I don't understand. Why does this guy hate me so much? I can't remember that I ever did for him a favor. I don't remember even one toiva I did for him. So why does he hate me so much? That's the reality. When you give a person so much, they feel humiliated. They have to take. And that humiliation of taking, it plays with your mind. And it sprouts and it turns into resentment that I have to have been, that I'm a recipient of your kindness. I would prefer to be the one who bestows kindness, not to be the recipient. And that turns into hate, the bad midos. You learn a musa. What you learn, the biggest musa you learn from this parasha is sometimes you have to learn in life how to take. And that's a hard thing to swallow in this generation, where we live in the generation of entitlements, where everyone is a taker. Take, 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 take. We have a problem of giving. We don't have a problem of taking. But the truth is, it's the other way around. Taking is a very painful, it's a very, very painful thing. It's painful to take free gifts. You see, in America, everyone is rioting. They're rioting.
Entitlement culture.
Right, we live in entitlement culture. If I don't get my $2,000 stimulus check, I'm going to burn down your house. Okay, they're going to go, they graffiti on the homes of the politicians that they feel have prevented them from getting their $2,000 stimulus check. Who says you're entitled to even $1? Everything that you have in this country is the chesed. Who go to a soup kitchen? Who gave you $2,000? You didn't get your $2,000 entitlement check. You have to go spray graffiti on the homes of politicians and put dead pig heads? Excuse me? Who says you're entitled to anything? We live in a culture where we live in a crazy culture, but it's just the opposite. People should be riding in the street. We don't want $2,000 checks. Could you imagine? Well, I won't be one of those people, that's for sure, but that's how it should be, okay? There should be marches in the street. We don't want to take. We don't want to take. We want to give. You'll never see me there, but that's what we should be doing. That's what we should be doing. In this week's parish, and what's the Musa Haskell is, to learn sometimes in life, you have to learn how to take. It's a very painful thing. I remember once hearing about a very big askan. There was a very big askan whose whole life he gave, never took a penny. And then he had a tragedy. He was very sick with corona, and he needed a lot of help. He needed a lot of care and a lot of he needed a lot of help. And I think he even told me, he said to me, you know, I have to learn how to take. I gave my whole life. I would never take a penny from anyone. I would never let someone do for me the simplest thing. It would be detestable in my eyes for someone even to open the door for me. But now I have no choice. I'm in a very desperate situation. I have to learn a new midah. I have to learn how to take. And to learn how to take means not to resent and feel the humiliation of taking, which would naturally translate into resentment and bitterness. Dosan va'aviron were reshoim. Lo masake es re'echa. Re'echa kimoyscha. Re'echa kimoyscha. Where was the rishis? Where did it come from? We don't know. We don't really know their bio, and to understand an analysis of their psyche of what. But one thing that we do learn about dosan va'aviron. They did not know how to take. They were not taught in kindergarten how to take, because Moshe Rabbeinu gave them everything that they had in their life. Moshe Rabbeinu, in this week's parasha, saved the lives of Dosan va'Aviram. Aviram would have been dead. Dosan would have been labeled a murderer. And we have to assume that there would have been consequences. He would have been executed. He would have been imprisoned. He would have had a very different life. And Moshe Rabbeinu saved him from that. And yet, what do they go on and do the rest of their lives? They join forces two bitter enemies who wanted to kill each other. They joined forces to undermine Moshe wherever they possibly could throughout the entire Torah. Why? Obviously, any psychologist will tell you, first, psychology 101, you know why they undermine Moshe Rabbeinu? Because of the humiliation, knowing that they owe their lives to him. Because Moshe Rabbeinu saved both of their lives. He saved the label of being a murderer upon Dothan, and he saved the life of Aviram. They owe Moshe Rabbeinu their very lives. They were humiliated in acknowledging that, and that bred within their sick minds resentment, which they spewed forth their entire life by trying to get rid of the person that it was always a reminder that we owe you our life. Korach, we owe you nothing, Korach. In fact, we made you who you are. Korach, you don't even know the first thing what to do, how to become an elected official. We have a whole system here. We have Dominion machines, Smartmatic. We have partners in Venezuela, in Russia, China. We'll get you where you need to go. We know how to take care of you, Korach. We're the givers. But when they see Moshe Rabbeinu, they're humiliated because they know that they took from Moshe everything. And the Musa Haskell is that you have to learn sometimes in life how to take in a dignified way. And how to acknowledge the person who gave you did a chesed, and doesn't mean you have to feel humiliated, and you have to know how to reciprocate with kindness and generosity, and not bitterness and resentment, which
or at least akoras atov.
Akoras atov, exactly. There is an art in taking. I'm speaking to myself on deaf ears because we're living in a generation which is all takers. I'll leave you with one last thing. I was in Shabbos. I went to a Shalom Zachar, and I met a friend who works for a yeshiva, who sent out this week invitations. Every yeshiva is very creative this year in trying to raise money when you can't have a traditional dinner. No one has having a dinner. There's not even one institution that's having a dinner that I know of, because you can't have a dinner. It's like, honestly, you can't have a dinner. It's ridiculous. So everyone has a different idea. So you have online dinners, which is for some of them it works, it doesn't work. Everyone is very creative and struggling in how to raise money for their institution. So I got an invitation from an institution, which I don't give a penny to anyway, just waste of postage on me. But I was studying it. There is no guest of honor. Nothing. There is absolutely no. Some of these other organizations, so they have virtual dinners, so they have a guest of honor, there's always a name they use as a magnet. So I said, there's no guest of honor. This is hilarious. They're just asking people to give. So he says to me, exactly. This year, it's pure Nisina. It's pure giving. There's no taking. Ordinarily, you go to a dinner, you get a gift. They give you a little doggy bag. They give you food. There's a guest of honor. He gets kavod, imaginary kavod. Dimyon, olam ha-dimyonis. He really gets bezyonis, but he doesn't realize. And he imagines that he gets. So either you're getting imaginary kavod, or you're getting real bezyonis. And the people who come to the dinner get food, and they get some entertainment, and they get a little gift, and they get a little, you know, someone tries to buddy you up a little bit to massage your ego. You get something for your $18 donation. This year, you get nothing. No food, no COVID, no toys, nothing. It's pure giving. That's the theme of the dinner. Pure giving. Okay, Rabbis, have a wonderful day. Be well. Take care.
Okay, have a good day, everybody.
Have a good day.
Have a good day.